The most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome to Sports Talk on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams, who today is sitting in for Jimmy Hyams. How are you?
I'm fine. You didn't recognize me when I saw you earlier. He's a strange guy walking in the building here.
Welcome back. How was the trip to the Southwest?
Fabulous. Played golf the first 6 days. Went to Sedona one day, which is gorgeous. Went to the Grand Canyon for 2 days. Spent the night up there. My wife joined us on the trip. It just couldn't have been any better. Had a wonderful time. The scenery is just unbelievable. As my wife said, she ran out of superlatives, ran out of words to compliment how beautiful it is at the Grand Canyon and Sedona. But it couldn't have gone better. The weather was fantastic. I had been warned before by one of our friends out there, hey, I don't think you want to come. It's going to be in the 40s at night, and it was 20% chance of rain or 40%. We never got any rain. It was between 63 and 71 every day. Went to see the Lady Vols play twice.
Yeah.
Once in the morning, once at night. The night game was at Arizona State Stadium. The only time we saw rain was at night when they washed it out after, what, four innings or so.
Mm-hmm.
But we were so lucky with the weather and just couldn't have had a better time. It was fantastic.
Glad to hear you had a fantastic time. Great to have you back. A lot to get to today, as you had Tennessee basketball last night rally for a victory against Vanderbilt. Rick Barnes not happy at all with his charges after the game, so we will talk about, we will hear comments from him. We also have some other post-game reaction. We look forward to bringing you reaction from Tony Vitello, as Tennessee baseball was a winner over Charlotte in their final game before they head to Texas, and what will be a step up. Texas Tech, who they play Friday, is ranked number one by one of the 37 college baseball polls, so it is going to be a step up. Texas Tech on Friday, Houston on Saturday, and then top 25 Stanford on Sunday.
Well, I know that Vanderbilt's number one in one poll, and their pitcher Leiter threw a five-inning no-hitter with 12 strikeouts. Yeah, they're struggling,
yeah.
Vanderbilt out of the gate. But, yeah, you're going to see some fantastic baseball. It's in Houston, right?
It's in Round Rock.
Round Rock, outside of Houston. Okay.
North Austin.
Oh, Austin.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, I thought that was near Houston. Well, that state has a reputation of stealing signs, so don't let any signs be stolen while you're in the great state of Texas.
Yeah, very excited. This is the inaugural Round Rock Classic, so it's a fantastic field and I think a wonderful opportunity for Tennessee baseball. And we'll, let's see, we look forward to being joined by Silk Cozart. We had a caller earlier this week, Randy point out he's got a premiere tomorrow at Cinnabar in Westtown for his documentary Ball of Confusion about the great sport of basketball. But Silk will join us to talk about the event as well as putting the finishing touches to his documentary. And then John McClain of the Houston Chronicle will be on board with us from 5 until 5:30. Plenty to talk about in regards to the NFL, what's going on with the Astros, the XFL. He's very versatile. He'll touch on all of it. And then Mike Barnett will join us to take a deeper dive into Major League Baseball, the reaction to the Astros, and how spring training is going for Cleveland, as that'll be around 6:30. So we have all that and more, an Eric Kane practice report, all today on Sports Talk.
Let's get to our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters, technology you need, people you can trust. So I did get back in time to see most of the second half of the Vols game against Vanderbilt, and while at that point Tennessee went on a run and took a commanding lead, they did not finish it in a commanding way. Rick Barnes was upset about Tennessee's inability to put that game away. It got down to the very end with 5 seconds left to finally seal the deal. Jordan Bowden had to hit two free throws. He did. In fact, he was 7 of 7 at the line. But when you got a lead like that, like 11 points or so, in with a minute left, you got to put that away. And Vanderbilt went on a 10-0 run and cut it. Tennessee had three turnovers in the last minute. It kind of reminded me a little bit of the South Carolina game when Tennessee had four turnovers in the last minute 50. Some silly turnovers in that stretch against Vanderbilt. Didn't do a good job taking care of the basketball. And so next thing you know, Saban Lee's hitting a three to cut it to two, but Tennessee does get the win. And Jordan Wright, who really did, I don't remember him doing anything the first time Tennessee played.
4 points.
Vanderbilt, he had four?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he had 19 more in this one.
Yes.
23 points. That was his previous best was 11.
Yeah, he had that in the first half.
Yeah. And so Vanderbilt, which was 0 of 25 on threes, the first meeting against Tennessee, that snapped their long streak of making threes, was 8 out of 27. But it is a win for Tennessee. I thought several things. One, Fulkerson with his 16 second-half points. He finished with 17. He was kind of non-existent that first half. Got his first field goal with less than 10 minutes left in the game, but he turned it on. That was big. Vescovi does a lot of good things. Now, he does turn it over a little bit too much. But when you look at that line of 14 points, 7 assists, 4 rebounds, that's pretty good. 6 turnovers, got to work on that. Eve Pons got another block. John, that's 26 in a row with a blocked for Eve Pons.
Yeah, he just keeps the streak going. It's really been something to see. And he was also somebody that did not escape the crosshairs of Rick Barnes after the game was over. But that has been just an incredible part of his game this season.
Yeah, he had one of those turnovers in that last minute that Barnes wasn't happy with. So Tennessee now, so Mike Swartz, assistant coach for Tennessee, spoke at the Big Orange Tip-Off Club for a few minutes. And he said the Achilles heel for this team, the turnover. So Tennessee had 20 against South Carolina, 15 against Vanderbilt. That's 17.5 on average the last two games. He did say that the point guard play has been the unissue, but he said it's not the issue. He said that it's not all on the point guards. There are other players that have been making mistakes, whether that's Bowden, whether that's Pons or somebody else. Fulkerson's had a few too many turnovers too. But he said the point guard's still the head of the snake, and that's where it starts. But he believes that he said, here's the key. You have to find a way to be aggressive on offense without committing the turnovers. He also said that this team, Mike Swartz did, reminds him of Tennessee from 3 years ago. That team lost a close game to North Carolina. It lost a close game to Oregon, led by Dylan Brooks. And then the next year won the SEC championship. He thinks this is a team that has a lot of potential. They just haven't been able to put it all together. He was asked about football players playing basketball, Michaela Weidman and Dee Beckwith, and he said that you have to wait on campus to see, but he said we're excited to get them. Both of them are great athletes. He also said this. He said, I feel confident in saying there's no team in the country that has players that work more on their game outside of practice. He also said, and I thought this was interesting, I hadn't kept up with that close, but Josiah James leads the team in three-point shooting in SEC games only at 40%. And Swartz said, James was not known as a good shooter when he arrived at Tennessee. So, anyway, Tennessee gets the win. Another interesting game last night was that Kentucky-LSU game. Kentucky wins on the road 79-76. They continue to lead the SEC. LSU's now lost 4 out of 5. And how about this? Entering the second half, Kentucky was 4 of 34 on three-point attempts in their previous three halves. They were 7 out of 8. In the second half against LSU, they hit their first 7 threes. And that enabled them to pull away and get the win. Nick Richards had a solid game. Emmanuel Quickley also played really well for Kentucky. And Kentucky just looks like they're getting better and better, and LSU's going the other direction. Florida with an easy win over Arkansas, 73-59. Missouri over Ole Miss, 71-68. Ed Murphy passed away, by the way, former Ole Miss coach. He was 78 years old. Now, shifting away from basketball, how about Trey Smith? He wins the Jason Witten Man of the Year Award. That goes, it's kind of like the Walter Payton Award for the NFL. Mm-hmm. This is for college players, for leadership, for integrity, for contributions to the community. Trey Smith wins it. And I've been efforting to get Jason Witten for quite a while, ever since a few weeks ago Trey Smith was mentioned as a finalist. We still have not been able to track down Jason Witten, but would love to talk to Witten about Trey Smith winning an award named after a VFL. Witten, by the way, said he wants to play one more year, but he's open to the possibility of maybe it won't be with the Cowboys.
How different would that be?
Very.
Yes.
Be strange to see him play without that star on his helmet, but it's funny. So he retires a couple of years ago to go to the booth. He comes back, has a pretty decent year, mm-hmm. Saw a Dallas team that he thought had potential to make a deep run in the playoffs. They don't. But now he still wants to play another year. It's interesting he's got that hunger to suit it up one more year. I'm sure there are a lot of teams out there that would love to have him.
I think so.
So we'll see what transpires with him. While on the NFL, Drew Brees coming back, so I know y'all talked about that. the interesting thing that came up as I was watching some sports this morning, what's the best fit for Teddy Bridgewater now, Tampa Bay or Miami? Those were two of the primary locations that were mentioned. Then somebody else said, well, what about the Titans? And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, the Titans have Ryan Tannehill.
Yes.
And I would expect them to re-sign him. Also of note, Clemson is playing Georgia non-conference games. How about this? In 2021, they're at Charlotte. 2024, they're going to play in Atlanta. So Clemson versus Georgia, boy, those figure to be really, really entertaining football games. With Ryan Newman was in that just a horrific wreck at Daytona. He is awake. He's been talking, and Johnny's out of the hospital, right?
That's right. He was released today, which is unbelievable in terms of how quickly that was turned around. Because as you mentioned, it was unbelievable, the accident as you saw it unfold. And then you see slow motion and to how it was the car was hit and then where it was hit, catching on fire, going airborne, being on upside down. Unbelievable in how much safety is in place that I don't think there's any question results in Ryan Newman being able to literally walk away.
Yeah, that when you see that car go airborne and catch on fire and they had to get the car, I guess, flip it around to get him out. Oh, that's in many ways, I think he's pretty fortunate. China is forfeiting a Davis Cup match in which they were supposed to play Romania. Why? Flight restrictions due to the coronavirus.
Wow.
This is going to hit a lot of other sports, too.
Yeah.
There was already a pro golf tournament that was moved to Singapore that was supposed to be in China. Now, they're still, from what I hear, they're like, yep, the Olympics is still going on. Okay, we'll see what happens with that. That's going to be interesting. It's maybe, 6 months away? Something like that. So, by the way, Brooks Koepka, who I think may be ranked number one in the world in golf, 50-50 about whether he's going to play in the Olympics. He's looking at the schedule. He said that he's more interested in the FedEx Cup because if you win that, you get $15 million. That seems a little bit more appealing to him than a gold medal. Can't necessarily blame him. Kim Mulkey gets to 600 wins faster than anybody in college basketball. 600 wins, 100 losses in 20 years. That's pretty even numbers across the board.
Yes, it is.
So congratulations to Kim Mulkey, who was a star basketball player at Louisiana Tech and had a great respect for Pat Summitt because Mulkey was on an Olympic team coached by Summitt. And while Mulkey wasn't necessarily playing her best in preparation, Summitt took her under her arm and said, you're my point guard. You're fine. And Mulkey really respected that and went on to play really well in the Olympics. All right, Bob Huggins gets win number 879. That ties him all time with Dean Smith as West Virginia beat Oklahoma State. And then you've got tight end Greg Olsen signing a one-year deal with Seattle. So he has been with the Bears, then long time with Carolina, and now he's going to be in Seattle. SEC swim team. John, the Lady Vols in third. The Vols are in second after day one of the SEC Swimming Championships, right?
That's right. And the Lady Vols are in third, and they were projected by some to go in and win their first SEC championship. They're 7 points out of first place, so they're in third, but they've performed well. They had two relay teams that won gold medals. The two gold medals won by Tennessee in the action yesterday. Then you also had a men's relay team, the 200 medley. They won silver, and then you had both a Vol and Lady Vol win a bronze medal in diving. So day two today. So far, it looks like qualifying has the preliminary heats have gone well for the orange and white.
A couple of quick notes. John Boeheim out at the Cavs as a Cavs coach. He was in the first year of a five-year deal. He was 14-40. Boy, that it didn't seem right when he was hired to me, and now it seems even less right that he's out after a short period of time. Do you think he just maybe couldn't relate to the NBA player?
Well, see, I kind of thought it was all right. Let's see how it goes because you had a lifetime college coach that was taking on a very young team. Now, that doesn't mean they don't have any NBA veterans, and they have a couple that have been with that franchise for a while, Kevin Love and then really Tristan Thompson. But it turns out that there has been a failure to connect, some missteps along the way, and so now we'll see how it goes. But 5 years, this is just another that you can tack on to mistakes made by Cleveland and that front office. They have their first GM who ever got a contract extension with Dan Gilbert as the owner. Now we'll see if they can't have a coach that is with them for more than three seasons.
And it seemed like every 30 minutes somebody's piping up about the Houston Astros cheating scandal. Many of the players saying they should be stripped of the World Series title from 2017. Players were given immunity by the commissioner. And then there's now discussion with the MLB Players Association about if that happens again, they should not get immunity. At least all of the players think that the players involved in this scandal should be suspended. Joe Burrow says he has leverage in regard to his draft situation with Cincinnati Bengals, to which Marcus Spears of ESPN said, no, he doesn't. But then you remember there was the Eli Manning situation where he swapped with Phillip Rivers, mm-hmm. Giants, Chargers. The agent for Eli Manning, Tom Condon, with CAA. CAA has Joe Burrow. That doesn't necessarily mean Condon's been assigned to him, but there is that possibility. I don't know if Burrow, I'm not sure. You would think he'd want to play there because he's from Ohio.
Right.
But maybe he knows enough about their organization to where he doesn't want to play for the Bengals.
Yeah, Carson Palmer was very upfront, made some very pointed comments that said he never felt that the administration, the executive part of the franchise, was chasing a championship as hard as he and his teammates were. Mm-hmm. And that's perhaps something that he said Burrow should think about. I don't know how much leverage. We've had a CBS Sports Minute that's aired at least three times today that talks about whether or not Burrow has leverage, and this particular commentator doesn't think so, just like the one that you mentioned. And I think that he makes some valid points. Joe Burrow has one remarkable season under his belt, perhaps as good a season as any college quarterback has ever had, and one that perhaps will never be topped. But at the same time, some thought he was an average Joe after his first year at LSU. It was a remarkable turnaround. I do think that it's more than just Brady and his influence in terms of last year's offensive assistant with LSU, because you just see facets to his game that don't have anything to do with the system. His ability to extend a play, to move, to run, how accurate he can be with his deep throws. I just think he is a wonderful athlete, and he really showcased all of his skills this past season, but I don't see him having the leverage to say that. Because it's not the Manning family that's behind this. There's not an Archie Manning that's calling the shot here.
Yeah, and what also was interesting to me about Burrow, he was running basically an NFL offense that is similar to the Saints' offense. Mm-hmm. It's worked well for the Saints. It worked well for LSU. I think Burrow is, I shouldn't say a slam dunk because we've seen some people miss, but he's very close to a slam dunk based on what I saw him do at LSU, running basically a pro offense.
To me, the only thing that would get in his way would be a team failing to build around him, an injury.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because I think the skills are there. And again, it's not the system he was in. It's just everything that he showcased that he could do. He can make all the throws. He's got good athleticism. You look at the run that everybody talked about right before the half in the championship game.
Well, and A.J. Green might want to play with Joe Burrow.
Yes.
And that would be a plus for the Bengals offense.
Very much so. That's Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break and be back with more. This is Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
All sports, all the time. It's not a lifestyle we chose. We were born this way. 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Himes. And last night, as Tennessee posted the four-point win over Vanderbilt, you saw Kentucky win at LSU 79-76. Florida really looks like it's playing its best basketball as the Gators were pushed by Arkansas, but in the end pull away for a 14-point win. And then Missouri. Tigers have won three of their last four as they beat Ole Miss 71-68. So Missouri now back to 500 overall, 5-8 in SEC play, and Ole Miss also 500 at 13-13, now 4-9 in Southeastern Conference action.
Florida doesn't seem like it's 9-4.
It does not.
But it is. Mm-hmm. And so they've won some key games. By the way, I don't know if you saw this in the Florida-Arkansas game. This guy from Arkansas named Bailey decided to listen in on the huddle for Florida. And Kishwan Johnson, whatever his name is, kind of, hey. And so the guy flops. So they call a technical on the Florida, on Johnson, for kind of shoving the guy out of the way. But it wasn't I mean, it wouldn't have moved a fly. But he falls down, and so they go look at the monitor, and then they assess him a technical for doing that. They should have assessed a guy from Arkansas a technical for getting into the huddle.
Yes.
And eavesdropping in on the huddle. But anyway, I thought that was one of the more comical things about it. But Florida winning by 14.
Yes.
That's pretty strong. They look like, although I still think they're inconsistent, they've had some games where they're like, when they put it together, that's a pretty good basketball team.
It is. And now they are even. Now LSU has the head-to-head against Florida, but they now have the same conference record. And just think, Jimmy, as you were pointing out, just week before last, LSU had the largest lead over the rest of a conference of any team. And now all of a sudden, they're potentially tied for third.
Well, losing four out of five will do that to you. And the one that they won, they had a close call. I think it was against Vanderbilt.
Yes.
But they've really struggled. LSU has. And in Kentucky was the better team last night. As I watched that game, I was impressed with Kentucky's shooting in the second half. But this is an LSU team that is they're going in the wrong direction. Now, they're going to make the NCAA tournament, you would think. But right now, the way they're playing, and they've got enough players to be really good, but the way they're playing right now, they've got some more losses coming.
Yeah, they dropped out of the top 25 this week, and the struggles continue. But this was also something that you point to all of the incredible magic acts they pulled off to get to 8-0 in SEC play. And sometimes you just have that kind of good fortune throughout the course of a season. Other times, it's like, well, here's where the ball bounced your way, and here's where it doesn't. And they find themselves, I think, now where the ball is not bouncing in their direction.
It kind of reminds that old saying, that, you know, Parcells thing, you're all what your record says you are. But when LSU was like 8-0 in the SEC, I'm like, they're not an 8-0 team. And now they've lost four out of five, so they're, what are they, 9-4 or 10-4, whatever they were, 9-4. So that's kind of more like what I think LSU is. So I think at different points of the season, you're not really what your record says you are. But I think they're getting back to where I think their record is what they are at this point, because they have been losing some of these close games that they were winning earlier.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. 656-9900 is how you join us. 656-9900 puts you on Sports Talk. Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Yesterday, they played through the raindrops at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. Tennessee, in the end, coming away with an 8-2 win over UNC Charlotte. Tony Vitello met the media after the game and was asked first about Alaric Solari and the fact that he's not off to the greatest of starts at the plate.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I had a conversation with him about it. He wants to do as well as anybody, but, you know, it's a game of percentages, so it'll work out just fine. And you know, you'd rather it kind of work out the way that it is right now when he's maybe, I call him saving up maybe some hits, we're winning ball games. So I'll take that combination all day long. To me, it means some of his hits are going to come in big situations when we really need them. But right now, we've been pitching it well enough and playing good enough defense that some of the hitting that we've gotten has just been a bonus.
Fourth win in a row, you know, you're going through a tough challenge in Texas. How do you feel the state of the team going to a tough series there's going to be in Texas?
Good. I think with young kids, anytime they have success, it builds confidence. And, you know, you're not going to go through 56 games without getting, you know, punched in the mouth or the gut or whatever you want to call it at some point. But for now, I think they're excited about finding out what they can and can't do. And that's what good competition does for you. I think we had that tonight. But, you know, name brand wise, it'll step up a level this weekend. It'll be a little bigger stage. We're going on the road. So I think, like probably all the other three clubs, they're excited to go down there and see what they can do.
Building off that, is there some excitement of going on the road for the first time, especially when you get these types of opponents?
Yeah, you know, we try to duplicate it by going on the road in the fall, and we got a lot out of it, but I don't think we could really mirror what goes on in the spring. And it's competitive to make the travel roster. That's a thing. And then, two, it's, you know, in the middle of school, and we're going down for more than a couple days, taking a nice charter flight. So there's a lot of excitement that's built into it naturally. But, again, we're going to an unbelievable park, a tournament that's going to be run like a regional tournament. which would be a good experience that way. And then you're playing three of the top, you know, whatever number you want to throw out there. Again, name brands in college baseball. And there's some familiarity there, too, with some of the coaching staffs and some of the players for our guys. So it's got a unique little deal going on.
In terms of adversity of the weather today, I mean, it was raining. Do you like that players facing adversities like that to get used to the season?
I think it's good practice that we've had, you know, one cold day, one rainy day. We've had a couple schedule changes we've had to deal with already. And that's kind of the norm with college baseball. When we start so early in the season, and we were fortunate to have really good weather with spring training, it's up for one weekend. So we've been blessed to this point, and they need to learn to adapt a little bit as a group, because if you play as long as you want to, you know, in the postseason, even in Hoover, you really don't know when you're playing unless you're playing the first game of the day. So all that's been good experience.
Coach, there's a lot of power being demonstrated today. A huge home run to center field and left field, and then lots of long doubles. Are you really expecting this kind of power surge from your team?
You know, last year was a year we kept saying we're not going to be able to hit for power, we're not going to be able to hit for power, and the guys, you know, drove the ball well. But I think you got a good combination of Coach Elander working with our hitters and Coach Q working in the weight room with guys, and then guys getting older too. I mean, if you look at college baseball lineups, there's always on a good team a superstar freshman or two or a guy that's a really good player. But it's usually the older kids that handle the bat, you know, a little better. By nature, they're stronger. And so we've got kind of the perfect storm, I think, with this lineup. At the same time, I don't think it's a lineup or an offensive approach that stand up there and just wail away or take softball swings like Matt Stairs or anything like that. But it's there. So it's a compliment. So we got a little bit of speed, and I think we got the ability for some action with our offense too.
Is it safe to say, though, that you got what you wanted to see out of your guys in your first four games at home?
Yeah, I think so. I think there was a couple guys we maybe could have ran out there in situations on offense tonight or gotten guys some at-bats. You saw we squeezed a guy like Jordan Beck in there that, you know, he's really capable of just being left in the lineup and doing well all year long, in my opinion, on offense. So maybe they did what they needed to do, but I didn't do what I needed to do. But, you know, again, it's experimentation and find out what you got and what you can and can't do by SEC play. And then you're going to be tested to the limits there, so you want to be prepared for it.
Zach Daniels is hitting for an extremely high average this past four games.
Sure.
Last season he didn't do so much. Is that like a testament to his offseason work? Or?
Yeah, and you know, maturity, mm-hmm. You know, I think more than anything is just growing into the game and learning how to play baseball. All these guys get here and they get to Charlotte and they get elsewhere as freshmen, and they don't know how to play. And it's to no fault of their own. There's a lot of showcase baseball emphasis now. And then also our level is higher than high school. So why wouldn't it be more challenging, you know, to know the ins and outs of the game? And, you know, the other thing is he got off to a difficult start last year. He was injured at the very beginning of the year and wasn't able to play. And then you kind of feel like you're running in sand because you want to get in that starting lineup, but other guys are doing well because we got off to a hot start last year. So it was kind of the perfect storm for him to maybe struggle a little bit last year. But right now he's just doing what he's capable of doing. And as all hitters will experience, there'll be some ups and downs. But I think he's past the lows, the really lows, and the really highs. He's a lot more mature, and he's capable of doing great things.
I may be a little bit behind the times in terms of, I'm not sure what you said this weekend, but do you expect Crochet to pitch at all of this at the Classic?
No, all we've said with Garrett is the, you know, the honest truth, and a little bit of soreness, and part of that comes from needing to do a little bit better arm care. And we have some guys, we have our guys do mandatory stuff, but he needs to do a little better with some of the outside things that are optional, call whatever you want. But he's a guy who's put on 11 pounds in the last 10 or 11 months. He's got a huge body. It's moving really fast. Soreness by nature or lack of flexibility is going to come up. So now you attack it by doing the things that make you more flexible, and you'll be good to go. But I've had the very good fortune. I wouldn't have this job without being around guys like Max Scherzer, Matt Perk, guys that were in Garrett's shoes. And from my experience, it's not fun to mess with it. I don't have any interest in doing two steps forward, one step back, two steps forward. So we're going to have a good plan in place and a proper progression. And then when he's ready, we'll be ready. But until then, not much of a hurry for us. I kind of like the fact that we got to use some other guys and give these younger guys some experience.
What you see from Elijah tonight on the mound is, I guess, his first career victory. How do you like it?
Yeah, it was a better start than his first one. I don't know if you remember that one last year. We gave him the ball, and it was coming out pretty good, but he was too fired up as a freshman. He was jumping off that rubber. And he was much better this time around, but he's been much better the whole year. He's really made a nice progression from freshman to sophomore year, where you really need to in college baseball. But he's kind of learning not to burn so many calories out there, because he's a great kid, and he's incredibly athletic and wants to do well. And sometimes that can be misguided, but I think right now he's under control. He's loose, and he's shown that he's capable of being an SEC weekend starter when we got to pick those three guys out. And if not, he's going to have a good role or a formidable role for us all year long anyway.
Comments from Tennessee baseball coach Tony Vitello as they now get ready for Round Rock, Texas and the Round Rock Classic.
John, this may be hard to answer right now, but where do you think this Tennessee team is now versus this point a year ago?
Well, the sample size is so small, but I think you have to like what you've seen. Four games, eight home runs as a ball club, so a little bit more pop, but we are talking about taking on Western Illinois in three games. They're picked fifth in the Summit Conference, and one game against UNC Charlotte, which has a first-year head, well, a new head coach at the start of this year and this program. So I just think that this won't be, you know, if it goes the opposite way and it's a rough weekend for Tennessee, I don't think this also means that, well, all is lost. I just think right now things look good. I think you look at who's filling what positions. It looks like you've got good versatility and depth with guys that can play third, short, and second. You've got, same as you had last year, guys that can also play, a handful of guys that can play first. Great rotation at behind the plate. So I really think there are options for Tennessee, whether it be the starting pitching role, out of the bullpen, midweek starts, and relief. So I really like what they've shown, but we'll see.
I think it's probably wise to hold off on Crochet until he's ready to go. There's no sense rushing him. He's too valuable to your team. And it would appear they're taking the right approach to make sure you don't rush him. And I'm sure when he he does throw, he's going to be on some type of a pitch count right off the bat.
Yeah. So, again, they're wanting to be as conservative. In fact, he said probably too conservative for Crochet's wishes. But that's, as he talked about, who he's worked with in the past. There's just no reason to be in a hurry, because you've got 52 games left on the schedule. We'll get a break and be back with a final segment of this first hour of Sports Talk as you listen to 99.1, The Sports Animal.
The king of beer, the king of sports. Live from the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Radio WNML.
Final segment of this first hour of Sports Talk. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams. And Jimmy, as you highlighted in News and Notes, another major award for Trey Smith.
Yeah, Trey Smith, the outstanding offensive lineman for Tennessee, wins the Jason Witten College Man of the Year Award. Fantastic honor for him. He's the first junior to win that award. And he was honored last night. Here is his acceptance speech.
First and foremost, I want to give God the ultimate praise and glory. Without him, I wouldn't be here. I want to thank my family. I want to thank my friends. I want to thank the University of Tennessee Medical, academic, and obviously coaching staff for being here with me tonight. The whole time I was flying over here, and as soon as I woke up this morning, it's just one moment last year just kept bringing me back, you know. I was with my family, and I just visited doctors, and they're like, you know, man, hang it up, man. Like, you're done playing football. This is it. You know, something you dreamed about as a kid, a promise you made to your mom on her deathbed, hearing that it's done, you know, it's devastating. But, you know, we had our University of Tennessee football banquet, and when it was said and done, Coach Pruitt wanted to talk to my dad and my sister and I. We wanted to have a meeting, just see where we stood. And I remember sitting on his couch crying, you know. We were talking about everything that was going to go down. And I just kept thinking about this moment. I'm like, man, it's not over yet. You know, God put a vision inside of me that night that whole week saying, you know what, man, I don't care what it says, you know, I have more glory, I have more honor for you. See, God had a bigger purpose for me. I told Coach Pruitt, I looked him in his eye, I go, you know what, I don't know why I feel this way. I don't know why what's telling me to do this, but I know I'm going to play next year. I know I'm play well. I know it's going to happen. You know, Coach Pruitt supported me every step of the way. He told me, you know, man, don't change anything. Just keep trying. Act like your season's coming up. Just keep going. Keep going. For about 5 months, man, I was in the weight room, busting my butt every day, not knowing if it was going to pay off. When my time came, man, I was ready to go. I was ready to go this season. And I'm so thankful to be up here with y'all. But, you know, it's not about me. It's about all the people involved in my life. It's about all the people, all of you guys here, who we all can impact. We have to impact people while we have this time on earth. That's what it's really about. That's what's most important. As I write this next chapter of my journey, I have a lot of work to do. I thank you all for allowing me to see this award. God bless you all.
Wow.
Yeah.
Trey Smith, very deserving. I do remember back when he was in high school, his offensive line coach was Mark Bradley, former Tennessee offensive line coach. And I remember Mark telling me this. He said, Trey Smith is a great football player, but an even better person. And when you hear that acceptance speech and when you see what he's done and when you're around this guy, well, what a blessing it is for the University of Tennessee to be represented by Trey Smith.
Very much so. And also just a testament. He could have gone any number of ways when you look at how many question marks surrounded his ability to get back on the field. But Coach Pruitt said repeatedly that he made sure he was in the best shape of his life, that when the clearance came, he was ready to go. And while it certainly took some management for Tennessee and what he practiced, how much he practiced just to get the rust off, I just think that everybody had a really big plan in place, but it started with Trey.
I'm trying to remember, I think it was Coach Pruitt that said this, but we were talking to him one time about why is Trey Smith so aggressive in a football game? He said, because that's because he doesn't get to hit anybody in practice. He wants to hit somebody, and he is. There is a different side of Trey Smith on a football field. He does have a mean streak. He gets after it. He plays within the rules, but there's a mean streak where he wants to dominate and pancake people, and by golly, we saw a lot of that. I thought the first few games, he probably wasn't at the Trey Smith level, but maybe the last eight or so games, I thought he was fantastic. And Cole Kubelik thought he was so good that Kubelik put him on his first team All-America team.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We've got a lot more coming your way. Up next, we'll take a closer look at Tennessee and its win last night over Vanderbilt. This is Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal.